Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt, and while the regular Empire Podcast is on holiday for one more week, we're back next Friday, January 13th, folks, which is unlucky for, well, everyone. Here's a little bonus episode to tide you over. RRR, now streaming on Netflix, was one of the most critically acclaimed movies of last year, and rightly so. S.S. Rajamouli's action and song-packed three-hour epic told the tale of the imagined friendship between two real-life Indian revolutionaries, Aluri Sitarama Raja, played by Ram Charan, and Komaram Bheem, played by Junior NTR. But that brief description of the plot won't prepare you. You're not ready for the incredible action sequences as these two superhuman men come together to soar, leap, punch, and kick anything that moves. It won't prepare you for the phenomenal musical sequences that pepper the movie. It won't prepare you for its harder-hitting edges, nor the genuinely affecting friendship at its core, as the relationship between Ram and Bheem ebbs and flows before the two come together, quite literally, with Ram on Beam's shoulders for the fiery climax. It's a movie that was celebrated and embraced by Western audiences, with some of the finest action directors on the planet praising Rajamouli's sure touch and handling of the insanely OTT action scenes. Now considered one of the finest action directors on the planet, I jumped at the chance to interview Rajamouli when he came to London late last year. We talked about the film's incredible success, his working methods, some of its major plot twists and turns, and action sequences, and he was an absolute delight. But needless to say, this is an interview that is pretty spoilerific. It also exists on our RRR Spoiler Special over at our Spoiler Special subscription channel, which might give you a clue to how spoilerific it is. So do not listen to this unless you have seen RRR. There you go. That is my recommendation to you. And now, without any further ado, here is my interview with S.S. Rajamouli. Do please enjoy. We are delighted to be joined on this RRR podcast special by the film's director, S.S. Rajamouli. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, it is an absolute pleasure to be here and talking about this rip-roaring ride, RRR, of a film. I mean, it is absolutely incredible. You're here in London. You've just told me that you're here at the tail end of 4 days of BAFTA Q&As and you know, just generally talking to people about the movie and getting it out there into the awards conversation. Is this beyond what you were hoping for with the movie? I mean, I imagine you knew it was going to be a big success, but the way it's broken out must be a surprise.
The film getting the kind of reception it is having right now in the Western world itself is something that I never ever expected. So me presently campaigning for BAFTA or Academy was something really out of my radar. So I never ever imagined that I would do this. So once we started getting the appreciation for RRR from outside the Indians across the world, initially, we thought these might be the friends who came to the film along with the Indians. That must be the reason. Then as it started getting bigger and bigger, literally going into thousands of tweets on social media, and critics, celebrities, directors, story writers, reviewers, gamers, when people of repute started appreciating the film, we thought, God, we made something big. We made something bigger than we imagined.
Well, certainly today, I know what I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about, you know, this incredible central relationship, this really complex friendship between Bheem and Raju, and the way that you advance character through action, and the way you advance plot through action as well is mind-blowing. But before I talk about the things that I want to talk about, what are people talking about when they talk to you about the film? What's the sequence or sequences that they're talking about?
Mostly they will talk about the explosive sequences. The highest thing they would talk, most of the people talk about, is the dance sequence, Natu a dance sequence. Yeah. And they go into the animals crashing into the party sequence, and one man against 10,000 people sequence, both the friends joining for the first time, joining hands underneath the bridge, the climax sequences, the whiplash song, the whipping song.
Yeah,
that, I mean, whatever I expected people would react to in the film in India, those are the exact things which people are reacting across the world.
Because you almost, I don't know how you know, in terms of, that's pretty much the list I had, by the way. But when you're structuring the film in the edit suite, I'm fascinated. It feels to me almost like you're a band that is putting together a set list, and you're getting, okay, this song here will get the audience on their feet at this optimal moment. Is that partially what you're doing in terms of parceling out the spectacle and parceling out those action sequences, while at the same time keeping an eye on the way that the relationship between Bhim and Raju is constantly shifting? The dynamic is constantly shifting.
I do that, but not on the editing table, but on the writing table itself.
Right on the writing table, right from
the writing table itself. So for me, in my mind, one thing that I constantly strive to get is like one emotional high, one spike once in every 10 minutes. So the audience who are watching the film should get some kind of high. It can be an action sequence, it can be a dance, it can be a simple scene that evokes laughter. Whatever it is, every 10 minutes there should be something which will snap the audience out of comfort zone.
Yeah.
If at all they're in their comfort zone.
I don't think they're in the comfort zone.
So that is one thing constant. But at the same time, I should be very careful in how I am getting those sequences. There should be an emotional requirement in the story that allows me to do that. So the moment I select a story of like, I have two extraordinary human beings who are very focused in achieving what they want, but in the process of achieving that, their paths will put them against each other. So they have to fight, but unknowingly, before they realize that their paths are set against each other, they become friends.
Yeah,
that is enough for me to, that simple line is enough for me to understand, oh my God, I can have so many emotional highs, and each emotional high leading to an extraordinary action sequence in the process. So that's my thinking process.
That's amazing. And also, how much do you think about the hierarchy of the friendship and the hierarchy of the relationship? Someone always seems to have the upper hand until the very end when the two of them come together.
Yeah,
I mean, literally on each other's on shoulders, which is amazing. Yeah. But it struck me that Raju, in many ways, has the upper hand a lot of the time. So he's at the top of the hierarchy. You know, he is. You know, during Natu, he effectively lets Bhim win. He is, you know, he wins the fight between the two of them after the attack on Scott's encampment. And of course, you know, at the end, he is the one who effectively lets Bhim kill Scott when he could have done that himself as well. So in your mind, was he, in a way, always at the top of the hierarchy of that relationship?
No, for me, it is quite equally balanced. One thing that I was pretty, we made to make a very important point is that by the end of the film, people should be equally emotionally attached to both those characters. That is one thing. And it depends on which perspective you see the characters. If you see from the Bhim's perspective, he's the person who saved Ram's life. From the snake bite. He's the person who told Ram that that I am going on a mission.
Yeah.
I would like to take your help, but because in the process, we might get killed, but I don't want no harm to befall
of course,
on you. So that's the reason I'm leaving you back and going alone. It is the beam's unyielding, unyielding mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he is whipped, when is the blood flowing out of his body,
yeah,
that he doesn't kneel to his oppressor. That's what makes Ram realize that even though his goal is correct, the path that he has chosen all these days
is wrong.
Was wrong.
Yeah.
So Bhim inspired him to choose the right path, and it is Bhim who got the guns from the crumbling building. Ram's aim to fulfill his aim.
Yeah.
So it depends on which perspective you see the character. And that's my intention too. When I don't want to equally place them at every point. At one point, I wanted one person to ebb up, flow up. But then I wanted the other person to go up. It is a kind of ups and downs. But by the end of the film, you should love both of them equally.
Mm.
So that is my intention as a writer and a director.
So when you're sitting down then to plot out the film, we should maybe jump straight to the end.
Mm.
That incredible sequence where the two of them do come together and Ram admits that he was wrong. I mean, that's a really powerful moment when he's in the underground cell and the two of them come together, they clasp hands. But you go straight into the sort of the release of that incredible sequence where they're on each other's shoulders.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing.
Yeah.
And they're specifically pointedly not using modern weapons in that sequence as well.
Yeah.
Was that always where you finished it? When you sat down to write this, when you sat down to visualize this, was that always how you saw it ending?
It was a bit of a struggle. I mean, one thing that we clear was both of them doing a piggyback ride and doing the action sequence. So until that point of time, both of them are individually fighting their battles. But at the end, when they join the hands, I wanted them to come together, literally together. So it is one person who is 10 feet tall, who has two legs and four hands fighting against a big enemy. So literally that's how I wanted to bring, but using the weapons was something that I had to struggle a lot, because on one hand, in the real history, Allur Sitaram Raju, towards the when he started revolution, he dressed himself as a warrior saint in saffron robes and long flowing hair, beard with a bow and arrow.
Mm-hmm.
That's the getup. That's the
yes.
getup that we gave Raju towards the end of the film.
Yes.
So in the history, he had bow and arrow. I want to connect that dot to that point. But at the same time, in my film, the story is about getting the guns.
Yes.
So it was a bit of a struggle. So I think we used here and there on the piggyback ride, we used the guns to an extent.
Yes.
Then when he is in the in that warrior saint attire, we gave him the bow and arrow and again added grenades to the arrow to again use the modern weaponry. It's a bit of a struggle. I wouldn't say it was an easy thought, but yeah.
Yeah. But of course, it also brings to an end this. It finishes with that wonderful capper, I guess, of the running motif that runs all the way through the film, which is Scott's speech about an English bullet and how much an English bullet costs and how much you cannot waste an English bullet.
Yeah.
Pretty much from the moment that he first starts saying that, you can imagine that he might meet his end at the wrong end of an English bullet. Yeah, but how important was that running theme for you?
Two aspects to it. One is Scott talking about the bullet and Ram giving it back in the end. That is a part of a writing. When you plant some thoughts, some ideas, some visuals, some dialogues, in the beginning of the movie or in the course of the movie, and bring it up again in a better better way or reversing it. Mm-hmm. People enjoy that.
Yeah.
Audience enjoy that. That's a nuance of film writing.
Yeah.
Like you were talking about the piggyback ride, but we established that in the friendship song when Bheem puts Ram on his shoulders and he's just doing the sit-ups. And it at that point, it looks like a nice, funny scene. It makes you feel, oh, Bheem is quite strong. But in the end, when you really see him putting Ram on his shoulders in a much more emotional, stronger way, it enhances, it multiplies the effect. The same way the dialogue too. It's the nuance of film writing. Mm. Coming to the colonialism and the effect of colonialism on my country or any other country, I was pretty much sure I was not talking about that aspect in the film. Mm. What I've done is essentially a fictional movie. Mm-hmm. Even though the characters are real, the entire story is fictional. Mm-hmm. There were no historical accuracies in the languages, in the situations, in the characters, in the costumes. It was not an accurate account of 1920s India. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A wrong sentence would be the British are villains in the film. Mm-hmm. The right sentence would be the villains in the film happen to be British.
Yes.
So that is the way, because Alluri and Kumaram fought against the British or died in the hands of the British.
Yeah.
The villains happened to be British, and because I had very little screen space to work on the characters, I didn't give them too many dimensions. They're singular in their dimensions, the villains.
Yeah.
For me, I was telling the story of a friendship.
Yeah.
Not the story of freedom struggle of India, even though the characters are freedom fighters. I was not telling the story of freedom struggle. I was telling the story of friendship.
And I know you've spoken in the last couple of weeks about how work has tentatively begun on a possible sequel to this. Can you say about anything about where you are with that? And because this is such a fictional story, does that give you the license again to do that again if you were to continue to tell a story with these characters? Because obviously, you know, they met very tragic ends in real life.
Yeah.
But you have a fair amount of leeway, I think, to work with before that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be fiction again, no doubt about it. I'm not going to the history part of it. We had many ideas of how we could expand RRR in the initial days of the euphoria of success of the film. Mm. But none of the ideas were really great. So we left it at that. But recently, a few weeks back, when we were discussing that again, me, my father, who is a story writer, and my cousin, who is the another story writer. Mm-hmm. We are the essential core story group. My cousin suddenly came up with an idea which we thought was great. This is great. This is something we can't let go. And I asked my father to spend time on the story and etch it out, to spread it out and make it into a complete script. That is definitely on. Writing the script is definitely on, because we are really kicked up about the idea. But once the script is done, is when we look into process of how to bring this to screen. At present, we are seriously into writing it.
Okay, interesting. What's next for you? Have you lined anything up?
My next film is with Mahesh Babu, who is a big star in Telugu cinema. I wanted to do an adventure film for a long time, very long time. Indiana Jones is my absolute all-time favorite series. I wanted to do something on those lines, much more modern, much more expansive in its setting. An action sequence happening in all corners of the world.
Amazing.
That's what we are writing now.
Fantastic. Wish you all the best with that. And And just then to go back to this wonderful relationship that runs all the way through the film, I wanted to talk about the way you introduce them, essentially, both both going through feats of you know, displaying feats of strength, feats of mental strength. So you have Ram fighting basically 10,000 people, which is amazing. You have these larger-than-life mythic introductions to them. You obviously have Beam fighting against tigers and all sorts of wild animals, both separately, both displaying great prowess. Can you talk about starting off with that?
That is basically setting the tone of the film. I wanted to show them as human beings with extraordinary determination, and that determination gives them extraordinary physical strength. Of course, you see Ram fighting 10,000 people, beating his way through, but subconsciously you also see that he's not angry with them. He's, even though he captures one person, throws him on the feet of the British officers, you see that he's not angry with that guy. In fact, you see that he's sad. So unknowingly you understand, oh my God, this guy is one hell of a guy. but you also know there is something going behind him. Audience subconsciously know it. And same time, when you see Beam, the way he is struggling with the tiger, he's fighting with the tiger. And in fact, he actually literally says that he's sorry. He tells the tiger, sorry, and he says, brother. Brother, I'm doing something for my selfish goal. I apologize to you. And all throughout that, you see that he's not angry with it, and in fact he's sad. So both the things tell you these guys, oh my God, these guys are like great. They can do extraordinary things, and you are ready to see those extraordinary things, what's going to come further on the screen. But at the same time, you also sail with them personally. You find a personal affinity with those characters. So those two things are very important. And I think with the two introduction sequences, we achieved that.
Okay, so that was S.S. Rajamouli. Now, the rest of that interview, about another 10, 12 minutes or so, can be found over at our RRR Sporter Special, along with Team Empire doing a deep dive into the film. And that is, of course, a subscription service, but you can sign up at empire.supportingcast.fm for just £2.99 a month, or $32.99 a year. And you'll also get access to 300 spoiler specials and counting, including interviews with some of the biggest names in movies and TV, the likes of Christopher McQuarrie and Ryan Coogler and Quentin Tarantino and Ryan Johnson and Ryan Reynolds and other people who aren't called Ryan. We would be delighted to have you on board. RRR, I've mentioned it already, I'll mention it again, is streaming now on Netflix, so check it out if you haven't already. You will not regret it. And we're back next week on Friday, January the 13th, with the next regular Empire podcast and tickets for our next live show, episode 550, would you believe, are on sale right now. That's going to be taking place on Thursday, February 2nd at King's Place, London, our spiritual home. And to pick up tickets, go to kingsplace.co.uk. Right, that's enough for me. Enjoy your weekend. I'm off to wrestle with the tiger. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. Bye.